Welcome to Move Left Idiots, a socialist talk podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Monterullo, joined here by my co-host, Comrade Dracula. Comrade, what's happening?
Oh, fuck, I gotta sneeze. Hang on. Okay. No, it's gone. It's gone. I don't know what happened.
Should I just redo the intro?
No, we're live, baby. We don't edit this fucking
live,
thing.
Pal. All right. Yeah, so
yeah, here we are. Once again, America, thanks for staying up late with us or getting up early, one of the two. I don't know. What time is it right now? Is it daylight? Is it nighttime?
I don't know. It's kind of indeterminate right now.
The days are short.
Rainy and windy and fucking dark.
Halloween's right around the corner. Or if you're
the most wonderful time of the year.
Adult, it's still called spooky season. Yeah, I've been watching. I've been sort of re-watching The Wire, it's one of those shows. You as soon as you get done with it, like you want to start it again because you're just like there's just so much, you know. And I was reading through the IMDb page, and you know the Oscar's famous whistle he does, you know.
Omar, yeah.
Oscar, Omar, right? Omar Little, yeah.
Fuck, what is this? It's like a coming around the mat. I forget what no, like children's like rhyme it is.
Dell, oh right, Dell right, whistle. Right. But apparently, Michael K. Williams, the late great Michael K. Williams, couldn't whistle.
Really?
So they had to have someone else do it. It was actually the whistle was
dubbed.
Provided by someone named Susan Allenbeck, who I think was one of the line producers or something like that. I don't know.
Just, so you're going to say she was like a professional Hollywood whistler.
Like, no, it was just like he couldn't. They got on set and realized he couldn't do it. And they were just like, well, who knows how to whistle?
it's actually a lot of people. I couldn't do it until I was like, I miraculously figured out how to do it when I was like 20 years old. It was very bizarre. Like I would try for years. So like, you know, I'd be playing along to like Patience by Guns N' Roses when I was learning to play guitar, and I would just fucking try to do it, and it would just be, you know, I couldn't do it. And then I know, and then eventually,
I'm glad you gave up because that would be, you know, just that would
no, I figured it out eventually. But
well, I'll tell you what, I've never figured out how to blow bubble gum, so I guess we're equal. I think one's a little bit more useful of a skill than the other, though. So not to put them both on the same pedestal, but
right.
Anyways.
Right. If you're so, yeah.
What are we going to talk about today?
We got a lot to talk about. I did get my third booster shot yesterday, though. So if I do, you know, about 23 hours ago. So if I start, you know, speaking in tongues in the last half of the podcast, it's not just because it's our Halloween episode. It is because I. You know, the microchips or whatever are really starting to engage. But no, I feel fine, actually.
Do you get extra magnetized out of that booster shot, or is it just
weirdly, all screwdrivers and stuff are like sticking to me, but I hear that's only temporary. That's only like a day or so, and then that kind of goes away. So I'll be all right.
Well, what's the benefit then? Why should I, as a magnetized American, want to get the booster shot if I'm not going to get any more magnetization on
any extra magnetization? I don't know. I mean, you know, just good of your fellow man. But yeah, so let's talk about obviously the big news this week was the really tragic incident on the set of Rust, which is this Western that they're shooting out in California. Or maybe
New Mexico.
Yeah, I was gonna say never mind. I don't think it was in the desert, but it was in California. They're shooting it out in New Mexico. Movies produced by and starring Alec Baldwin, which is, you know, again, the only reason Alec Baldwin would ever be cast in a Western, especially, you know, modern day Alec Baldwin. I think you can make a case for like 90s, like The Shadow era Alec Baldwin being cast in a Western, but modern bloated Alec Baldwin's kind of a weird choice, but you know, he's producing it, so that's you know, the explainer. And they, you know, obviously it's a Western, so they all have six shooters on set, and one of the prop guns accidentally you know, Alec Baldwin was either testing it or doing, you know, either doing a screen test or they're shooting, and he fired around and killed the director of photography, whose name was Helena Hutchins. And I think he wounded one other guy, the director, the AD or whatever. But so, you know, obviously the news of this broke and everyone's like, what the fuck happened?
Everyone knew what happened. Obviously, I was on Twitter and you could see from the responses that everybody is a ballistics expert and also has worked on a Hollywood set before, because everyone
right,
knew.
Of course.
Everyone knew exactly what had happened definitively.
Well, so, right. And so a lot of stuff, obviously, actually, and honestly, pretty quickly came out after this shooting occurred. Namely that, you know, the crew who was on set had walked off the set a few days prior due to poor working conditions, lack of pay, and poor safety conditions. Because
it was six individuals allegedly, on the film crew from the camera crew who had walked off, who were union, and they were replaced by non-union people. So it was not right. The entire film crew. It was
no,
six
well,
individuals.
But it seemed like it was a fairly small crew. You know, it was a significant chunk of the crew left and were replaced by, presumably by the producers. Like, again, this is all stuff that's going to come out in discovery and in the trial. The finer details, but from what these kind of whistleblowers who had left the set said, there were previous misfires with the prop guns on set. There were major safety issues, and there were a bunch of non-union crew members brought in to keep the production going, rather than addressing the actual concerns of the people who walked off the set. You know, again, we don't know for sure, but it very well could have led to the person involved not using the proper protocols and making sure the gun was not loaded with a live lead projectile, or, you know, a live round. I know there's conjecture as to the actual definition of that term, but and people are using it interchangeably. But, you know, it wasn't properly checked, obviously. And this poor woman lost her fucking life over it. And so, you know, this woman, Helen Hutchins, this was apparently her first like big DP job, her first big director of photography job. And yeah. She was like 40 years old, which is, you know, it takes a long time to get to that point. And it's just fucking extra tragic that, you know, she worked her whole life to get to that fucking position where she was actually allowed to, you know, kind of put her artistry onto the way something was shot. And
there's very, very, very few women DPs in the industry.
Yeah, right. It's again, like
the last thing that women end up ever do. There's more women directors than there are DPs, I'm sure of it.
Right. And there's not a ton of those either, you know, so it's very difficult.
It's, you know, you have on set, you have a prop master, and then you have somebody, if they're just in charge of wrangling the guns, they're called an armorer. And the armorer apparently wasn't there while they were doing this rehearsal. Basically, what he was doing was just sort of practicing how he was going to draw the weapon out and fire it really quickly. And he was aiming directly at the camera because that's how the shot was lined up.
Right. They were doing screen
DP tests was behind the camera. The director was behind the DP. People were like, well, how did he shoot two people? It's like, well, because he was standing very close to them and he fucking shot her in the chest. And the bullet went through her and hit the director.
Right, and you all have to huddle around the monitor to see how the shot looks. Now it's composed. You know, you all stand basically on top of each other.
But even if it hadn't gone all the way through her, like, people were asking online, were like, how could it have possibly too? Did he shoot two? You know, like,
it's horrible
fucking
luck.
Ricochet.
I mean, it is
bullets
horrible
fucking
luck,
ricochet. Bullets fragment. Bullets break into little pieces. They go all over the place. You know, it's like they'll figure this out. It's day one. It's not some big fucking conspiracy.
It's not right. It's not the magic bullet. But no, and it is fucking horrible luck. I mean, that shot managed to just perfectly, you know, and it's just, you know, it's again, it's a fucking tragedy, but it's not. I mean, it's an accident, but it's not an accident so much as it is negligence on the part of the crew of this fucking production, the non-union crew that was brought in, presumably, and apparently the AD, who's the one who handed the gun to Baldwin, you know, who I guess is not a trained armorer and should have had no business, you know, giving a prop gun to an actor on set. And apparently there's also apparently and again, all this is speculation, but conjecture that he said cold gun or cold, you know, cold whatever the terminology is on set when you're saying, hey, this gun is fine, I checked it, like, it doesn't have live rounds in it. And apparently he didn't fucking check it enough, despite the fact that
they said he checked it before they went to lunch, and then they came back from lunch, and it's like it's on a cart with a whole bunch of other guns.
He picked up the wrong gun. Like he picked, you know,
picked up the wrong one, or somebody added bullets to it because they thought that after lunch they were going to be, you know, like who knows?
Right.
You have no idea. But clearly they weren't keeping track of shit, and someone's dead, right?
Right.
And, you know, if there is a trial, there's got to be charges, unless it's just simply civil litigation against Netflix or whatever the production company was. But yeah, it's like, you know, people say, well, why would you have actual, you know, ammunition on a set, you know, especially when it's a Western, when you don't need to have anything be, you know, authentic in that case. You could just do whatever the fuck you wanted to. And it's like, because I'm sure there was a scene at some point we see somebody loading the gun. Right. And they want it to look realistic. Right. So it's like, okay, well, sure. Make a bullet that's realistic. That's not an actual bullet.
That doesn't have gunpowder in it. Projectile in it. Right.
Right. It, you know, or make fucking authentic replica weapons that aren't capable of actually firing a round.
Right. If you use a shell casing that doesn't have gunpowder in it, the reason it shoots itself out of the gun is because the hammer explosion strikes the gunpowder and it right, it explodes the projectile. So if you have a shell casing with nothing in it and you click it, nothing's gonna fucking happen. Like it's not gonna shoot out the gun. So
right,
there's no reason
you can still have
those.
The bolt action, you could still have the revolver turn, you could have all that right. Stuff. The only thing you wouldn't have is the actual explosion and the muzzle flash and the recoil, which I'm pretty sure if you're an actor, you can act out the recoil and you could CGI in a muzzle flash, but it's just
right,
like
they do it all the time.
Don't look quite as realistic. You know, it's like nobody's gonna care. Nobody's gonna fucking even notice with all the shit they do nowadays.
They also make prop guns that actually do fire and make noise and don't have any projectiles in them or fire any projectiles. Like they just more expensive, so you know, when you're skimping on costs or you're, you know, not as worried about safety, and I'm sure it's not like industry standard yet, but I think it really needs to be at this point that you get a gun that doesn't have any potential of firing a fucking projectile at somebody. You know, and obviously this is not the first time this has happened. People, you know, immediately the thing that was trending on Twitter was Brandon Lee, because everyone immediately thought of Brandon Lee's death. You know, obviously the son of Bruce Lee died while making The Crow, which is a great 90s kind of gothic noir action sort of horror movie. Not really horror movie.
Have
but
you watched it lately? Does it hold up?
I don't know. I haven't watched it lately. I think it might not. It was very 90s. Let's put it that way. It was very
90s.
Very of its time, but I remember loving it. So I mean,
the fact that you loved it in the 90s doesn't mean much if you haven't watched it lately, but you made a shitload of sequels and then a TV show.
Oh, no, all the sequels were awful. I mean, Edward Furlong, like post drug bender, was the second Crow, I believe, in the sequel. So it's not a, if that tells you the direction of the franchise. But no, Brandon Lee was great in the role, you know, even if maybe the movie doesn't hold up. And, you know, obviously was young and had a promising career. And I think it was shrapnel from the blank that was fired, pierced him and fucking killed him, like he bled out or whatever. But
you'd think blanks wouldn't have shrapnel. Kind of defeats the purpose.
Right. Kind of. Right. It's like literally the one, you have one job, which is not to fire anything out. So and again, I don't know the finer details of that, but it, you know, and it obviously was reminiscent of that. But I thought it was more reminiscent of was the accident on the set of The Twilight Zone, which killed three people back in 1986. For the Twilight Zone movie. And, you know,
was that the Twilight Zone movie with like the kid who could do anything and they were terrified of him? And then like,
it was like they made it after Creepshow. So they tried to kind of use the Creepshow formula of like four short segments, you know, into a movie, like with a wraparound.
They did the Man on the Wing remake of like
William
Shatner, but they had John Lithgow be the guy.
Yeah, the terror 50,000 feet or 20,000, whatever.
Gotcha.
It was.
So the deaths were from a segment with the helicopter, something with the
right,
helicopter.
Right. So I remember. Right. So and then weirdly they fucking left this segment. I mean, I don't know if I'm sure they didn't leave the shot in that they shot of that, but they actually continued to film and finished this segment, which is pretty horrific when you hear the details of this. So This was a segment directed by John Landis, famous director, the Blues Brothers, American Werewolf in London, a million movies that you've seen. I'm going to read actually the details from the Wikipedia article because it's pretty short and concise. And there's obviously much better articles written about it, but this is a good summation of the negligence that went on that led to these three horrific deaths. Twilight Zone, the movie, featured four segments. In the script for the first segment, character Bill Connor, played by Vic Morrow, is transported back in time to the midst of the Vietnam War, where he has become a Vietnamese man protecting two children from American troops, which, you know, is a red flag right there because he's a white guy portraying a Vietnamese man like as Vic Morrow. But, you know, whatever. It was the 80s. Filmmaker John Landis, who directed this first segment, violated California's child labor laws by hiring 7-year-old Mika Din Lee and 6-year-old Renee Xinyi Chen without the required permits. Landis and several other staff members were also responsible for a number of labor violations connected with other people involved in the accident, which came to light afterwards. The children were hired after Peter Weitai Chen, Renee's uncle, was approached by a colleague whose wife was a production secretary for the film. Chen first thought of his brother's 6-year-old daughter, Renee, whose parents agreed to let her participate. He then called a Vietnamese colleague, Daniel Lee, who had a 7-year-old son named Micah. Micah was an outgoing boy who enjoyed posing for pictures, so his parents thought he would be interested. Chen later testified that he was never informed that either of the children would be in proximity to a helicopter or explosives. Lee and Chen were paid under the table to circumvent state law, which did not permit children to work at night. Landis opted not to seek a special waiver, either because he did not think that he would get permission for such a late hour, or because he knew that he would not get approval to have young children in a scene with a large number of explosives. Casting agents were unaware that the children would be involved in the scene. Associate producer George Folsey Jr. told the children's parents not to tell any firefighters on the set that the children were part of the scene and hid them from a fire safety officer who also worked as a welfare worker. A fire safety officer was concerned that the blast would cause a crash, but did not tell Landis of his concerns. And so now this is the details of the actual accident itself, which just the lead up to it, just an incredible amount of negligence and criminality, specifically on John Landis's part. The filming location was Indian Dunes, a ranch in the Valencia neighborhood of Santa Clarita, California, that was used throughout the 80s in films and TV shows, yada, yada. The location was within the 30-mile zone. It's wide open area permitted more pyrotechnic effects and was possible to shoot night scenes without city lights visible in the background. The night scene called for Morrow's character to carry the two children out of a deserted village and across a shallow river while being pursued by American soldiers in a hovering helicopter. The helicopter was piloted by Vietnam veteran Dorsey Wingo. During the filming, Wingo stationed his helicopter 25 feet from the ground, which is not fucking far at all, while hovering near a large mortar effect. Then he turned the aircraft 180 degrees to the left for the next camera shot. The effect was detonated while the helicopter's tail rotor was still above it, causing the rotor to fail and detach from the tail. The low-flying helicopter spun out of control. At the same time, Morrow dropped Chen in the water. He was reaching out to grab her when the helicopter fell on top of him and the two children. Morrow and Lee were decapitated by the helicopter's main rotor blades, while Chen was crushed to death by the helicopter's right landing skid. All three died instantly. At the trial, the defense claimed that the explosions were detonated at the wrong time. Randall Robinson, an assistant cameraman on board the helicopter, testified that production manager Dan Allingham told Wingo, "That's too much, let's get out of here," when the explosions were detonated. But Landis shouted over the radio, "Get lower, lower, get over lower." Robinson said that Wingo tried to leave the area, but that we, quote, lost our control and regained it. Then I could feel something let go, and we began spinning around in circles. Steven Lidecker, another camera operator on board, testified that Landis had earlier shrugged off warnings about the stunt with the comment, "We may lose the helicopter." Lidecker acknowledged that Landis may have been joking when he made the remark, but said, "I learned not to take anything that man said as a joke. It was his attitude. He didn't have time for suggestions from anybody." So that, I think, is a more comparable comparison in this case because of just the repeated instances of gross negligence on the part of the individuals involved in making this production. And yeah, obviously for people that didn't know that story, you probably will never look at John Landis the same way again, but
John Landis, and in the top five results of for John Landis right now, article entitled "Reminder: John Landis is terrible." First sentence: people have been saying for years that the only reason that let me skip over that part. Oh yeah, John Landis accused of emotional and sexual abuse by 8 women yesterday. This is dated 2012.
Oh wow,
I'm sorry, 2020. April 28, 2020. Yeah, great guy. Right. So yeah, and that's what everyone's kind of wondering. Like nobody thinks that Alec Baldwin's culpable for drawing a weapon.
No, shooting it. No,
pulling the trigger on what he thought was a completely empty gun, but. Like he's the fucking talent and he's the producer. So you might have had this guy who's actually the director on the film, but if Alec Baldwin's the producer, he's the one who's running the show and setting the tone. And, and then on top of that, we've got like every week there's a new streaming platform that comes out who are hungry to deliver content. There's this huge content war happening right now and they're just greenlighting everything and trying to rush these productions through as fast as possible, as cheap as possible. And they're clearly cutting corners and someone died because of it.
Right.
And it's like, I'm sure Alec Baldwin's like, oh, I can go make the Western I've always wanted to make. And it's like, nobody asked for that.
Right. Right. And it's just, it's just horrible for her family and for her friends and for everyone, who was involved with her that this fucking happened because of just a totally preventable thing. There's basic safety protocols with guns on set. Like I saw this 60 Minutes piece on it and there was an armorer on set. It's like, yeah, it's like rule number one on the first day of like prop school is like you take any gun that you're going to use in the scene. Flick through each chamber 7 times, one extra just to make sure you didn't miss anything, point it at the ground and shoot it 7 times. And then you could say it's cold and hand it to an actor like that. You do not just hand a fucking gun off a cart to an actor, assuming that you did the right thing in preparation. Like it's just, it's insane. It's like gun safety 101, but just clearly didn't happen on the set of this movie because they were cutting corners. They didn't have some of their crew on set because the conditions were bad and they walked off and, we'll find out more, but it's fucked up.
It is a tragic, but it's also tragic that, that unions would take this opportunity to capitalize on a woman's death to push their agenda. their agenda of trying to prevent dangerous workplace environments. Yeah.
Right.
This is always gets me is people don't understand. It's like they don't understand the cause and effect. Right. Because before we had unions, you had people dying by the hundreds in linen factory fires in New York City. Right. Because they were locked in the building and had no union representation to say, hey, maybe we shouldn't lock people in so they can't get to the fire escape. So, because of that, you have this huge swell in the union movement in the early part of the last century. It's like people forget like why we needed to create unions in the first place. And it was to prevent things like getting killed at work.
Right. And now, union membership is nearing an all-time low in this country due to just decades of erosion by everyone in power and the moneyed interests. And we're kind of almost back to where we started. I mean, we're not far off from the fucking Triangle Shirt Fire days.
But now we've got Striketober. We've got multiple high visibility strikes going on around the country. And then just this morning, today, there's this John Deere strike. And apparently somebody got hit by a car and killed. And they're saying that part of it is that, the John Deere factory is on a street that's 5 lanes wide and the speed limit's 55 miles an hour. So you can imagine that's probably out in some fucking sprawl hellscape.
Where is the John Deere factory?
I don't even fucking know.
Wisconsin, I think.
But they also, they like shut down all the lights along their property, the John Deere factory there. So just making it like extra hazardous for people to walk a picket line, right. You know, in front of their factory. And, you know, no word yet on whether this was, you know, somebody who was a scab who was like trying to drive through the picket line, or somebody just, you know, accidentally ran over one of the striking workers. But right. It's just, you know,
Iowa, by the way,
reason why, you know, building factories out in the middle of the fucking car centric hellscapes is just awful. You know, right. you can't have places that are safe for people to walk and also have a highway where the speed limit's 55 miles an hour. The two are just fundamentally incompatible.
Right. By the way, it's in Iowa, which is, you know, the tractor capital of the world, I'm assuming. So that makes sense. I think it's only fair that everywhere in that city surrounding the factory, you should only be allowed to drive a tractor, which probably has like a top MPH of like 20 miles an hour or some shit. So that would make it a little bit safer. But yeah, so and you know, obviously IATSE voted to strike, which is the production union in Hollywood, all the, you know, the grips and the basically everyone who's involved in the actual, like, the crew portion of the production of a Hollywood, you know, movie or TV show. And right now apparently the union bosses of IATSE came to a tentative agreement with the studio heads, and everyone's saying it's fucking terrible, and, you know, there's still obviously it has to be ratified by the members, but there's a weird fucking superdelegate process even amongst the IATSE union, where like the 23 like union halls vote, like not the actual, like the members vote, and then the union halls send their vote into the you know, the leadership. So hopefully there's no bullshit going on there. But I mean, again, if everyone in the union is going to be opposed to this, or a majority of them, I think they'll have to come back and renegotiate. But it seems like their terms were not met, and all they're asking for is like weekends off, like a 12-hour break between production, like not having to fucking like work for 18 hours and then go to sleep for 3 hours and come back on set. You know, just basic fucking human dignity and human like rights that, you know, most workers to some degree already have, that is just non-existent for crew members on a Hollywood set. And, you know, like the people that do rigging and like set decoration, like set building and all these sorts of like construction-esque laborer jobs on these sets, it's a very physically grueling, demanding job. And it's really fucking hard to do for anybody, and there's very little care given by the, you know, the producers and the people like that who control the kind of pace of those sets as to like how those people are physically holding up. So that's really what they're striking about.
I was watching that Netflix series, The Movies That Made Us, and they finally came out with one about a black movie coming to America, directed by John Landis. Technically the white movies that made us anymore. They finally got a black film in there, right. But they had one on aliens, and I thought I knew everything about the production of that. I knew there was, you know, like some very unsafe things happened on set.
Yeah, James Cameron's a psycho. He's an amazing director, but he's a psychopath.
Yeah, well, the little like little kind of short flat tank they drive around in, right, and they go into the aliens lair, and then they have to get out of there. They fucking caught on, like the whole inside of the thing caught on fire with all the actors in there. You know, cause there's like a flamethrower involved or something like that. Right. They like literally almost burned to death. But one of the things that drove James Cameron crazy was working with a British crew that insisted that twice a day they had to stop for tea. Like the entire production had to shut down. It's tea time. And he's like, like, no, you're gonna fucking work. And they're like, nope, sorry James, we're not. And he would, you know, he's a perfectionist and wants everything done a certain way, and of course you got a vision. And, you know, I think that, you know, the final product can attest to why you need somebody who has, you know, knows exactly what it needs to look like if it's gonna look even a little bit good.
But that's why unions are important, because it's important that somebody like him gets in large part gets his way on set to make it perfect, but it also needs to be people there to be like, hey, I'm the person responsible for taking care of the well-being and the welfare of everyone else working on the set.
Well, apparently the big problem was the AD, and he would, you know, Cameron would tell his AD, like, here's how I want it lit. And then the AD would just, like, not do it. He would just light it the way he wanted it lit. Right. And that's not like a working condition thing. That's just like we have different aesthetic tastes. And if you're the AD, you're working for the director.
Right. You don't get to make that decision. Like, as
right. So he fired the AD and like the entire rest of the crew walked off and said, well, if he goes, we go. And it was like, what? Like, that was so foreign to him. And apparently it was Sigourney Weaver who, like, was the key player in trying to get everyone to come back for him. But mm-hmm. she's like, you need to apologize to them and tell them how much their work means to you, which he did not want to fucking do. Cameron was like, no, I'm not doing that. And she fucking talked him into it. She talked him into, like, you know, being humble and apologizing and taking everyone back on. And he did it. And everyone after that was like, worked harder and like got the fucking shit done. And just, it was like,
right. So, you know, if you don't treat people like a fucking tyrant, like they actually want to help you kind of achieve your vision, even if it's like, you know, psychotic and like you're really a perfectionist, like they'll, you know, they'll help you. And it's not, which is not to say that great movies haven't been made by complete psychos that abuse their cast, but, you know, do you need to do that to make a great movie?
I just love that the heroine of the franchise was also like the savior of the production on set, you know, like the one person everyone liked and would listen to. Was you know, negotiated a fucking peace agreement between you know,
like you know,
staff.
Like, I don't, did Stanley Kubrick need to fucking torture Shelley Duvall to get that performance out of her? I don't really think he did. I think she's competent enough as an actress in The Shining, of course, I'm talking about. Like, she's competent enough as an actress that he didn't have to fucking psychologically torture her to, or you know, will.
I don't know. Like, you read that the interview she did last year, like, I don't know where. Yeah, someone found her out in the desert and did an interview, and she says, like, she doesn't have any negative memories of Jack Nicholson or Kubrick from that production. And he would always, like, check with her first. Like, hey, we're going to do this scene, and this is going to be really difficult. Are you up for it? And she said he always was checking in with her to make sure she was okay with everything. And so, yeah, I certainly there have been many cases of people being mistreated in Hollywood.
William Friedkin, among them,
but
famously.
She claims who's that?
So the director of The Exorcist he wanted to constantly keep the cast and crew on edge because he wanted to really just them to be terrified at all times when shooting The Exorcist. Would just fire off live guns randomly on set, like, you know, into the ceiling or whatever to, like, make people fucking, like, right before they were going to call action on a scene, you would just fire off a live gun and then call action. And they would just be like, maybe this is fucking excessive.
People think Werner Herzog was a fucking psycho. He was probably the most sane one of those guys back then.
Oh, did you hear he's getting an action figure, by the way? They're making a the Client action figure from his portrayal on the Mandalorian. I just would love to see.
Why now? That was like 2 years ago.
I know, but I would just love to see somebody like showing Werner Herzog his action figure for the first time, and just like the existential dread in his eyes, and like the I'm sure great comment he would give on it.
I want my Klaus Kinski action figure. I want my fucking Fitzcarraldo action figure and a model of the boat hauled over the mountain.
Right.
So yeah. Anyway, this Shelley Duvall article, she kind of dispelled a lot of the myths about Kubrick and Nicholson picking on her. She said it was quite the opposite. Now the biggest asshole of the whole story was Paul Simon. Paul Simon, who was dating Shelley Duvall, when Shelley Duvall had to get on the plane to go fly over to England to shoot The Shining, Paul Simon took her to the airport and then dumped her at the gate of the airport.
Brutal.
Like, imagine having to fly across the fucking Atlantic Ocean. You just got dumped.
Right. From LA, which I can't even imagine how fucking long of a flight that is. That's really.
Like, what a fucking Pete. Like, no one, you can't call anyone. There's no cell phones. You can't text anybody. It's just you by yourself flying across the world, just bawling your eyes out, about to go work in a foreign country for months on end. Like, what a piece of shit you are.
Right, because he probably wanted to hook up with some chicks, like, and not have a guilty conscience about it. So he's like, I'll just do it right before she gets on the plane. That's why she can't yell at me.
Woody Allen's having a party, so I know you're taking off. I might as well just cut this cord now. See you, Shelley.
Fucking dick.
Fucking asshole.
What a dick. Great songwriter, but huge dick. But yeah, so well, you know, I kind of keeping it in the vein of movie-ish slash political discussion, I wanted to talk briefly about the controversy on Twitter the other day surrounding The Eternals, which is a movie that I have no interest in ever seeing. And you know, I know I'm probably in the minority here, but I'm just very like, if I never see another generic Marvel superhero movie again, I wouldn't be that bothered. I mean, obviously I'm excited for the Spider-Man movie, but like the taste I used to have for these movies, my tastes have changed significantly, and I just find them very, you know, formulaic and rote and whatever. But you know, again, that's just personal taste, not, you know, saying anything beyond that. But that being said, this movie The Eternals looked just like it looked like a piece of shit to me from the second I saw it. I was like, this is just, this is Marvel and Disney saying, like, we will make you fucking assholes pay to see anything that we put, any shit that we churn out. You know, we'll put the fucking that Kumail guy in it and fucking load him up with roids, and you know, we'll put any asshole in this movie and you'll go see it because we slap our logo on it and you'll love it and defend it to the death against any criticism. So
you don't want to see the Stark brothers reunited in a different universe? You don't want to see that? That's not exciting to you?
Is that happening in this movie?
Yeah, fucking Rob Stark and Jon Snow.
I thought you meant like Tony. So I was like, does Tony have a brother? Like, I was like, what are you talking about?
Man, you're so stuck in your silo, man. No, you fucking Rob.
No, right. I like both of them as actors, and I'm glad they're getting work. But like, I just
they probably don't even have any scenes together. That's the tragedy,
right?
It's just gonna be like, you know, they kind of cut it together, look that way in the trailer, but they're never actually gonna. And who gives a shit, honestly? Like, who fucking cares? I just want to see like the giant fucking like dude with six eyes. It's like taller than a fucking solar system. Like, you know, but again, I could just watch the trailer if I need that. I'm not that excited about this, honestly. I wasn't excited about going and seeing the Dune remake, you know, because it's just exactly the same fucking movie, except it's only half of it, the first half, because they're going to do a part two.
Right.
You know, and it's like, but people are going to go see it. They're going to go see it because there's a bunch of famous people in it that they would probably fuck if they could.
Right. And that's mainly how movies are cast now, pretty much. But and really for all time. But no. So like the big thing that came out of The Eternals was like a lot of people who have seen it already were posting just ridiculous things that happened in it, including one scene. And I'm going to read out an excerpt of which is a descriptor of the scene. There's also Phaestos, I don't know, Phaestos, a magical inventor of new technologies played by Brian Tyree Henry, who boasts one of the time-jumping movie's most confounding moments. The screen reads, Hiroshima, 1945, while Henry stands amid the wreckage and yells, "What have I done?" So, and apparently, by the way, his character is also gay. That just, like, thrown in as an offhanded thing. So they made a gay black guy responsible for Hiroshima. Not the fucking psychopaths who, you know, said, oh, yeah, you know, hundreds of thousands of civilian casualties. Fuck it, you know, why not? Even though there was no point in dropping the bomb at that point anyway, because Japan was ready to surrender and it was just a fucking display of strength.
But we already
by psychopaths.
Like, why would they make up a fictional character for a thing that we know who?
We know who's responsible for it.
Yeah, fucking Oppenheimer.
Right, who made it. We know who, you know, obviously the fucking president had to order it. Like, we know the people responsible for dropping that bomb. But no, let's like, what a weird piece of historical, like, fictionalization, like weird thing to claim as, like, for a character in your thing is like, oh yeah, no, I'm responsible for that. Like,
and then he went there and he's like walking around being like, oh shit, what did I do? Like, what did you think it was gonna, like, what? I guess I'll have to, because I haven't seen it, so I don't know how it plays out. But yeah, that seems a little heavy-handed, even for Marvel.
Yeah, and it's just fucking ridiculous. So, you know, obviously, this prompted a discussion of the fact that the military works hand-in-hand with Marvel to make sure that their stories are portraying the military in a correct way. And, you know, the DOD has a whole division dedicated to Hollywood and making sure that they're basically, it's a quid pro quo. They give them equipment and like jets and like material, you know, just props and shit to use in their films in exchange for ensuring that the portrayal of these military individuals is correct. Like, just, you know, basically making sure the propaganda is well made. And so somebody, this guy Jesse Hawken, tweeted out, the gay eternal assuming responsibility for the atomic bomb being dropped on Hiroshima is even more amazing once you factor in that Marvel scripts are all approved in advance by the Pentagon, which prompted James Gunn, you know, famous director of Guardians of the Galaxy, and just recently made the Suicide Squad, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Marvel, you know, one of the kind of like staff directors at Marvel now, tweeted out, Marvel scripts are not all approved by the Pentagon. Where do people come up with this nonsense? And then he responded to another comment right under that, somebody saying, I always thought most studios had their scripts checked by the military because eventually they'll need to borrow tanks and shit, and they don't want to piss off their supplier, which is accurate. And James Gunn replied, no. When a film uses military assets for free, those specific scripts have to get military approval to make sure the military isn't disparaged. This is very few films, and from what I know, the military is pretty loose about it. So you literally just said no, but then agreed that yes, if you're using a tank or a fucking helicopter, or you mentioning the military in any way, that you do have to run it by the military so that they are not quote unquote disparaged in the script, which is a fucking...
Well, they're not going to fucking do anything disparaging of the military in the first place, you know?
No, like, they're all bootlickers. Even, I mean, you know.
You know, even the... You know, some of the Marvel TV shows where, you know, the CIA is ultimately the bad guy, or you find out like the CIA has been behind all of it, but you never actually like see anyone from the CIA. It's just, it'll be like a passing mention, right? Because if you made like actual characters from the CIA, the villain, then like, then they would have a problem, right? So it's the way they kind of navigate that is definitely shady. But yeah, you know, the Pentagon and the CIA, they both independently have offices of film management.
Right.
Like they had, and these are, you know, you can go look up their phone number if you want to right. call
they're
them.
Right. They're not hiding it. It's not a secret. Like this right. is, they're very proud of this, despite the draconian, you know, overtones of it. Marvel works fucking hand in glove with them all the time. I mean, Captain America, or not Captain America, Captain Marvel was a fucking 90 minute, you know, infomercial for the Air Force. Like that fucking movie,
yeah,
despite being dreadful, was clearly a fucking infomercial for making being an Air Force pilot with girl power as glamorous as possible. And they wrote open articles about how it worked in collaboration with them to make that. She made that. Brie Larson starred in a fucking Air Force recruitment commercial. Like this is not this is not a cabal or a secret conspiracy.
The least liked Marvel movie, which is, you know, like people loved, you know, fucking Deadpool 2 more than Captain Marvel. But they really, you know, I think they hit the ceiling as far as like the limits of how much military propaganda people would tolerate, you know, and also having just like a completely stilted wooden character that also didn't do him any favors either.
It was a very weird decision.
Then I wake up today and I see this fucking trailer. Chris Evans Buzz Lightyear movie trailer reveals the Toy Story character's origin. Like the
origin of the toy within this film that came out 30 years ago. Like what? That's, I assume he was made in a factory in China somewhere like that. What's the fucking.
Okay. So this, the first Toy Story came out in 1995. And this is about the real life person it's based on, which is, it's clearly from the fucking future. So how could it be in universe, in the Toy Story Pixar universe, in universe, how could that be a thing that someone has a toy of if it doesn't exist till, you know, decades or hundreds of years in the future?
Well, so apparently within the Toy Story universe of 1995, we have already mastered interstellar space travel because he in the trailer, it seems like he's like on alien planets, like the actual Buzz Lightyear, who's supposedly an astronaut who, you know, goes to like other planets, which we have no ability to do currently, like you know, other
and non, they show him flying around in this little mini space shuttle It looks like the thing that Matthew McConaughey hops in at the end of Interstellar.
Right,
like,
basically like a
like
jet.
Hundreds of years later. Right. And I'm like, wait, how is this the real life story of a fucking cartoon's cartoon of a guy who, you know, anyway. But they put the fucking David Bowie Starman song in there and everyone's like, oh, I got to go see it because, you know, no, you don't. It's just, they're just ruining another Bowie song and making, you know, it's what did somebody say? Like, we're at the stripping the copper wiring out of the house level of right. American culture at this point.
Like it was the ultimate fucking who asked for this when most of us saw that trailer.
Oh, but I like the song, Anthony. I have to go see it now. Right. It made me feel feelings.
Right. Right.
Yeah, and somebody tweeted out, calling it now, okay, because people were like, you know, getting on their political soapbox about, you know, Tim Allen not being the voice of it anymore. They got Chris Pratt or Chris Pine or Chris Evans, whatever, whichever one of the
Captain
Chris's
America,
they got.
Right.
Yeah. Star-Lord. They got fucking Star-Lord. No, it's not him. It's the other one. It's America's. It's America's voice is ass, okay? America's ass is voice.
Exactly.
Somebody tweeted this out. Calling it now, there's a 100% chance that there will be a bit in the Buzz Lightyear movie where they're like, look, Buzz, you're so popular, they're even making toys of you. And they'll press a button, and it'll play a Tim Allen Buzz voice clip. And Buzz will say, it doesn't even sound like me. Because that's right. Exactly the kind of shit that Disney would do.
Just hack shit that's like super... Right, exactly. But... You know, whatever. I guess this is for somebody. This is for the people that vociferously defend them, even though they, you know, collaborate with the fucking stormtroopers of the fucking world, the U.S. military. Yeah. And by the way, there was another.
I'm looking at the picture here because it was trending, right? Because you remember when Twitter on your homepage used to show what was trending, and that's been replaced with what they call what's happening. And it's just like whatever they want to market to you now.
Right.
And if you want to get to trending, you got to click on see more and then go to trending. And then you'll see, like, of all the things that they want to market to you, like, none of them are in the top 10 of what's actually trending, you know, or they are now because they fucking forced it upon you and you clicked on it enough. It's like, oh, hey, look what's trending organically somehow. Right. And so I fucking click on this shit and there is Buzz Lightyear, but it's like the fucking realistic version of him.
Right.
And his fucking flight suit, the little logo, looks exactly like the Weyland-Yutani logo from the Alien franchise. Which is either there, like, ironically, because the filmmakers are trying to, you know, like, hey, look at this little Easter egg, you know. Or Disney actually made a movie where in the, you know, the real-life Buzz Lightyear, the real-life Buzz Lightyear, is, you know, the villain in his universe is actually an evil corporation that wants to, you know, create bioweapons and... test them out on unwilling, you know, space freighter crews.
Right.
So, like, which is it?
I have no idea.
It's not an accident that's the fucking logo that's on his flight suit. It's even like the color is the same. It's like gray and orange, and they kind of changed which parts of the thing. But it's like
it's as close as you can get without getting sued, basically, for like just right. ripping off another design.
Right.
Yeah.
And we're just every fucking year, we just get closer to the dystopia of, you know, the 80s filmmakers were trying to warn us about, the Blade Runners, the Aliens, you know.
Right.
And it's like you got people like fucking Elon Musk and, you know, guys like that, and they fucking see this, they see that, and they go, hey, yeah, that's a great idea. We should totally have a replicant. We should totally have fucking sex bots and have fucking bioweapons and, you know.
And driverless 18-wheelers that fly by people on the highway at 80 miles an hour. Yeah. Who, by the way, Elon Musk, who earned $36 billion in one day yesterday. So that's, you know, just a great fucking society we've allowed. By not cutting these people's fucking heads off.
I think you just get to a point, you can just write down a number. You just write a number and you go, this is how much money I'm worth today.
Yeah.
And that's like, well, who are we to argue? You already have more money than anyone. So it's like, is that a lot? A little? Right. You can just,
it's all
you
fucking
know,
fake anyway.
You can completely change the stock market with a single tweet. So at that point, like, what difference does it really make?
Right. No, I mean, basically the entire U.S. economy is at the whims of the fucking tweets of a Reddit shit poster from, you know, 2005. That's where we're at now as a society. Great, great, healthy economy and system that we have built. But real quick, I did want to read this because somebody had unearthed this from 2017, actually. And I don't remember this happening at the time, but I guess it was a quick news cycle item. The official Marvel Twitter account at Marvel tweeted out Marvel and Northrop Grumman join forces. Come check out the Marvel New York Comic Con booth tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern time. And that's from 10/6/17. 10/7/17, Marvel Entertainment tweeted, "This event has been canceled." Which I have to assume is because of you just massive fucking shit that everyone took on them for it's like, you know, we know you're doing this shit, but don't make it this obvious. I mean, don't fucking, you know.
Well, for anyone who doesn't know, what do they make?
Just fucking bombs and planes and missiles and everything you can kill a brown person with, basically. Northrop Grumman manufacturers. So yeah, just one of the premier defense contractors in the U.S.
But I thought people liked Colin Powell. I thought he was a hero. I thought, you know, bombs and planes and tanks, that makes you heroic, right?
Right. No, of course. That's why we were so respectful of him last week after his tragic passing after a battle with pancreatic cancer. But yeah. So obviously you wanted to mention the shit we got on Facebook because you'd posted that great meme of the brood from, and you probably didn't even realize this was what it was, but the brood.
Oh, I know what it is. Okay. I know who they are.
The WWF back in the 90s, who used to, like, they were like a vampire gimmick and they would like emerge up from a flaming ring. It was a really cool fucking entrance and it was cool, like, gothic music. Anyway,
what if they were real vampires though? What if that was like the bit? They're like, we gotta do something, we're bored, we're 1,000 years old. Right? Like, what if we just go out and tell people anybody. We're right, but it's you know, it's like something to do. You've seen What We Do in Shadows, right?
Like, just those guys, like, hey, let's just be fucking pro wrestlers for a laugh. Like, what else are we gonna fucking?
Yeah, I mean, what's the worst that could happen?
But that was actually at a time too when, like, I don't know if you remember this, but I'm sure you do. But like, there was this weird vampire subculture in the 90s where there were like clubs where people would just go, like, and it was like a whole like lifestyle where people would just like either wear fake fangs or like have their teeth surgically like sawed down to like vampire fangs, and they'd wear fucking goth shit, and it was like a real weird.
And that was just Wesley Snipes, everybody. Yeah. So we posted this back when Donald Rumsfeld died, and it was actually, I didn't come up with it; someone else came up with it. But it was just, you know, me and the boys watching Donald Rumsfeld descend into hell. And that got let's see, that was on June 30th. That got 1,200 likes. 35 comments and 203 shares. So wow. When Colin Powell died, I just changed the name on it and posted that.
Right.
And it got 806 likes, 409 shares, about double there, and 372 comments. So, you know, when you have that many comments, you pissed off some people.
Oh, yeah. Right? Didn't some guy tell us to go die or some shit? Like, one of the.
I don't know. I'm going to read some of these, though, because it was very obvious to me that the people who were mad were Democrats who thought we were like right wing Trumpers.
Right.
And the people who were pissed off that recognized that we weren't were the right wingers that were like, this is a far left communist page. Don't confuse us with this. It was like they knew who we were. But most of the angry comments were just like the dumbest people. And it's just the algorithm that Facebook has where, like, once it gets up to, you know, 1,000 fucking things, it just starts showing up in people's feeds who don't follow any of the groups it was shared into, don't follow us. It just starts showing up in people's feeds because it's engaging content. And people just like commenting, like, why is this on my feed? I didn't, you know, like, they don't understand how any of it works, right? So this is all these comments are directed at us, are talking about us, the two of us who run this page, who do this podcast every week. This is people describing us, who we are. Brian A. Woods writes, "So much hatred, I don't wish hell on anyone. My heart's desire is for all to come to a saving knowledge of Jesus and spend eternity in heaven." Like, what did we... But clearly, this is somebody who thinks that hell is real, and that if we make a meme about Colin Powell going there, it means that it defies the will of God and can send Colin Powell to hell, where apparently he doesn't deserve to be. Like, what?
Right.
This is like, if you pray hard enough, you can overrule God with a meme, apparently. Jim Peters writes, the mental order that is liberalism is on full display. So apparently a right winger that thinks that we're liberals and we're attacking Colin Powell from the left, but not really the left, but the center. I don't know. I don't even fucking know what this means. Apparently one right winger that still likes Colin Powell and doesn't realize that liberals are fucking, you know, that's he's catnip to them.
Right.
Fred Sindrich. Oh, by the way, all these profiles, they're all from people that are over the age of 70. Keep that in mind. Fred Sindrich says he was a great American, would have been a good president. Like, yeah, another war criminal president. Like, we hadn't had enough of those. Bill Mean says, do golden showers turn people orange? Rush is waiting there for Trump, waiting in hell for Trump. So apparently doesn't like, you know, likes Colin Powell, doesn't like Trump.
Right.
I would argue one is killed more than others. Doug Johnson, I'm liberal, but Colin Powell is one of the great ones, along with John McLean. Assume he meant John McLean, John McCain.
Well, if he meant John McLean, I'd agree with him. But if, you know, of course, of Die Hard fame, but I'm obviously he meant right. John McCain. He didn't need to add that first part, though, by the way. We knew you were a fucking liberal when you talked about how much
you say I'm liberal, but when you say I'm liberal, but, and then followed up with something that you, that's the only time when you actually are saying something that's true. Right. When you say that is like, I'm liberal, but actually all of my views are far to the right.
Right.
Which is basically all liberals now.
Right.
Gerhard Peter. Gerhard is your first name. Gerhard Peter is your last name. Gerhard Peter.
I like it. Hard Peter is like the second half of his name because it's probably a good indication of what kind of a guy this person is.
He wrote in response to the meme. He writes, do I read what I read? It doesn't even make sense. Do I read what I read? Is this for real? Goodbye, America.
Okay.
And like... So the first sentence, there's a question mark. The second sentence, there's a question mark. And then the last sentence, there's the exclamation point. But they're all separated from the sentence by one space for some reason. Like, they're just floating in, like, in the middle of these different sentences. Dave LeBach writes, proof once again that the Republican Party is populated by some of the biggest scumbags that this country has ever produces. That's what he says. That this country has ever produces. There is no bottom to what these assholes will say or do. Again, thinking that we're the Republican Party, you and me.
There's literally a communist fucking logo in the header of that post, like, which says our name on it. Like, which, like, I don't... How are people this bad at reading comprehension? I don't fucking understand.
Randy Nicholson writes, Powell served this country with honor. I'll bet not one of these cultists served a day.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right, Randy. We did not kill anybody on behalf of this psychotic country.
The cult of not wanting war crimes, that cult?
I know. I think he thinks we're because they call the Trump people like Trump cultists. So I think that that's who he's assuming we are for some bizarre fucking reason.
David Haith writes, the only group deserving a trip to hell is dishonest Donald Plump and cohorts, .. Jack Meyervold writes, again, who the fuck under the age of 75 has the last name Meyervold? Like, change your fucking name. Powell, much like the underrated Condoleezza Rice, both are dumped on because they have a spine and don't kiss any political ass. Rare courage.
That fucking killed me. The underrated Condoleezza Rice. What a weird fucking...
You know, when you had a spine and stood up to Karl Rove and Donald Rumsfeld when they were trying to go to war over a lie, and you had a spine and stood up to those people. Oh, no, you didn't. You went along with it knowing it was a lie. Okay. Yeah, rare courage.
Right. Okay. Right. No, the chief reason why the UN got on board with us is because you had a more credible voice to them and you fucking co-signed all their fucking bullshit and lies, even though you knew they were bullshit and lies and, you know, have since said as much. Yeah, no, real courageous.
Lucia Garcia I like that name, actually. Lucia Garcia writes Die Putz. That's a word, apparently, an acronym. D-I-P-U-T-S. Die Putz equals demented, illiterate, psychos, ugly Trump supporters. Read it backwards. Which, if you read it backwards, it spells stupid. Belen O'Prennell, okay, again, asks, what did you do for this country?
What?
If you don't start a war for this country that kills a million people, are you even American? What are you doing for this country?
I'm responsible for approximately a million less deaths in Colin Powell. So, I mean, what did I do for this country? I don't know if I can quantify that, but yeah, what a fucking bunch of psych. By the way, I was looking at this post. It's got it has a reach of 92,350 people. So
good. Yeah. I'm glad they're mad. I'm glad they're fucking mad. Betty Tidwell writes, another dumb bunch of Christian Republicans. Again.
Oh yeah, no, big Christian.
Who are we? Who are we? Who are we?
This is, of course, a Christian talk podcast, as I say at the beginning of every episode.
John Reed writes, Trumpansies expressing their ignorance. So I guess chimpanzees, Trumpansies. Get it?
I don't understand. They're not seeing this without like the post header, which has our fucking image and logo on it. Like, what? I don't understand how people are this fucking illiterate that they just cannot even be bothered to, not even to click through to our profile, just to read the fucking headline and to look at the banner image, which is a fucking hammer and sickle. Like, what the fuck is whatever, idiots. Absolute
Don Thacker writes, what have you done for this country except spread lies? Forgot a question mark there, so I don't think that was a query. Tim Reed writes, effing libtards. So we got one. Linda Jackson writes, three blind rat. They never did anything of valor. Couldn't carry Powell's lunch. Period. Periods and all.
Are they talking about us or the brood? Who are they talking? Is she talking about?
They never did anything of valor.
I'll tell you what, Gangrel never did anything of valor. He couldn't carry Colin Powell's slot. Like, what the fuck?
Have you backed any death squads in Nicaragua lately? Or are you someone that has never done anything of valor, Anthony? James White writes, favorite site for the progressive Bolshevik, fascist, Marxist, Nazi, commie pig, DNC party members.
You know, that's of course, those fascist Nazi DNC party. What the fuck? Oh
my sorry, God. I can't talk right now. I'm being attacked by commie Nazis. Mark Smith writes, how did this communist idiotic site end up on my news feed?
All right, so that guy at least knows. That guy's, you know, at least he can read.
Yeah, I'm just happy that he doesn't understand how, like, I thought I was paying for a non-commie newsfeed service. What is this, Facebook?
Right, right.
Eddie Sun Wukong writes, tell me you're a America-hating treasonous a-hole without telling me you're a America-hating treasonous a-hole.
Okay, I'm a America-hating treasonous a-hole.
I'm a America. Jeffrey Fandantium. That's I don't even know what the fuck last name is. Fandantium. It sounds like
a fake fucking Marvel like alloy that they used to create some fucking.
Look, we went to the planet with all the blue people to mine unobtainium. Right, it's just right. A coincidence that it's hard to get to. We didn't call it that because of, you know. Jeffrey Fandantium writes, nobody hates black people like Democrats hate a black person who has left the Democratic plantation. Pretty sure he left the Republican plantation to go be a fucking rhino in the Democrat Party.
Right. Anyway,
Les Rune writes, wow, all that because he was anti-Chump. The guy was a hell of a man, unlike the narcissist Chump. Thank God the big Cheeto was one and done. Exclamation mark. Five more. Okay. Ronald Berker writes, this inhumanity must stop or you can kiss democracy goodbye. It's two separate words, goodbye. Goodbye. I don't care how, but it must stop. Put these clowns back under their rocks. Sounds like a bot or a fox watcher.
Big Fox News watcher.
He's talking about us, apparently.
Yeah.
Talking about us. Melissa Bailey writes, "You are pus buckets," but she misspelled pus. So I guess she's writing, "You are poos buckets."
Two U's?
Yeah, I don't know. Bonnie Davis writes, "What a horrible thing to say. That should be Trump." Like, no, no comment there. Just, "What a horrible thing to say. That should be Trump." Sandy Ballard writes, "Y'all should be ashamed of yourself. This man served in our military so you could have freedom. Rest in peace, CP, and thank you for your service." Like, I don't think he can hear you. He's dead. And then
he said, "Rest in PCP" for a minute. And I was like, damn, I didn't know Colin Powell went that hard, but all right.
Yeah. It's R, rest in peace, ICP. There you go.
Rest in peace, Saint Clown Posse. What? Keep going.
This is my favorite one because it completely gets the point right, but unintentionally. Tom Sharon Hoppy, that's his name, writes, "God is the final judge!" Exclamation point. Like, yes, God is the final judge, and God decides whether you go to hell or not based on the things you did in your life. That's how it works. You get up to the fucking heaven, and then they decide if you get to come in or you fall back down into hell. God is the final judge.
Well, certainly to that guy, that's true. What a bunch of clowns. I mean, this is why, again, I don't fucking ever go on Facebook unless I'm like forced to, but like, hey, go respond to this thing, or like, oh, go look at,
oh my god, this blah, is this, blah, blah. These are the people on Nextdoor, who are posting things so like, funny. Hey, my grandson is looking for new outdoor activities and he's heard about something called the Squid Game. Does anyone know if there's leagues in our town? Like, literally, there's people fucking posting shit like that on Nextdoor now.
Yeah. I know. I signed up for our local Nextdoor because it's a very amusing, just the shit people will complain about is next level. But that's Facebook. That's what Facebook is. That's, you know, that's why young people fled Facebook like 15 years ago. And it's just overrun for the most part by boomers with basic reading comprehension, basic or below average reading comprehension, who just yell.
Well, I'm in Facebook jail right now because I called one of these people a pig fuck. And I got another like 30-day suspension on Facebook. I don't even use the account for anything other than just admitting our page,
right?
And I appealed it, and it said, no, this goes against Facebook community standards. And I'm like, is there any more Orwellian and horrifying term than Facebook community standards?
I can't find it, but there's some guy who basically said, die commie scum or something on our page. I didn't think that guy's account got suspended. Facebook is just unfucking navigable. It's so bad and so poorly laid out. Let's see.
Huh. Yeah, no. I can't. I mean, there's 400 comments. I can't find it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to looky, but I just went for like, you know, scan through, found the best ones. So
no, I was just looking through some of them. Just real fucking our messages, our private messages too, are just a fucking cesspool of psychos. Like, just fuck you. You fucking pieces of shit. Motherfucker. All because we called a fucking psychotic war criminal, a piece of shit, or just told, you know, said that he was going to hell.
Well, these are people commenting, or people that literally believe that heaven and hell are real things, and saying go to hell is like, to them, is like, you know, calling someone a cunt to their face.
Right.
Like, this has deep religious meaning to the people who are commenting on this. So I just love that. Like, all it takes is a fucking meme of like some wrestlers from the 90s to just make them lose their fucking minds.
Right.
Like,
right.
It's that easy to fucking piss people off in the heartland.
Right. So, well, yeah, so that, I mean, that, you know, pretty much. Oh, and we should briefly mention that story that came out about how Elizabeth Holmes, you know, obviously the Theranos founder, swindler, whatever you want to call her, apparently scammed Betsy DeVos out of $100 million. So you know, everyone's got multitude. Everyone contains multitudes. Everyone, not everybody is all bad or all good. Even Elizabeth Holmes can do something redeemable in her
life.
Well,
like, she's a fucking resistance hero now. They all love her now. And you tell them that she's, you know, going to go to jail for 20 years for fraud, and they go, you'll think, oh, that's a conspiracy against her from the Trump regime. Like, they'll manufacture any way that, like, they can, you know, say this woman who, her entire personality, her voice, her fucking tone of voice was a lie, is somehow now good.
Right. Well, you know, Joe Biden and Henry Kissinger believed her and went to a bunch of her and gave her funding and went to a bunch of her lectures. So how bad could she really be? I mean, clearly she, you know, she's just being maligned unnecessarily. And she did actually have a product that worked and didn't just make it up and get and scam a bunch of people out of billions of dollars. But yeah, no, just very funny bit of news this week.
So I wanted to read one last thing here before we get to our Halloween clip to close it out. And this was actually, somebody posted this back in May, and it was in a thread that I said something in, and someone liked it. So I was going back and looking through this thread. And our favorite zyosexual Eve Barlow, or as she likes to refer to herself, when she writes articles about how she's treated on Twitter, Eve Fartlow this was back. Somebody had some screenshots of her when she tweeted out, "My Jewish friend saw a sign that said free parking and panicked. She thought it said free Palestine. The Jews are tired."
Oh my God.
And I replied to that, "There's no signs that say free parking. Free parking doesn't have a sign. Paid parking has a sign." Right. Like, that's not a thing that exists. There's no signs that say free parking. It's not. So somebody found a post of hers from Tumblr, and I'm guessing this is probably around 2012 because that's when people still wrote things on Tumblr.
Right.
And this is fucking insane. This is Eve Fartlow, and this is her post from Tumblr, and it's titled, "What the fuck is WOC, Weapons of Color?" So she had a little freak out the first time she heard, you know, saw the, you know, women of color abbreviated as WOC. That seemed to bother her for some reason. I can't imagine why a raging Zionist champion of Israel would be racist, but, you know, first time for everything, I guess. Right. So she writes here, "I started writing a book about myself yesterday." Like, because who are the people who would want to read a book about Eve Fartlow other than herself?
Right.
So she says, "I started writing a book about myself yesterday, but then I stopped because I realized it wouldn't have any Chinese people in it. That's a problem, right? That my book about myself wouldn't have any Chinese people in it? Because there are Chinese people in society, and I'm not reflecting that. I am not reflecting the real world where Chinese people exist. Maybe I'm the problem. Maybe I need to take a bigger look at my life and ask, why, Eve, why are there no Chinese people in your life? Is it because you are not living in the right environment where you have the ability to meet the biggest cross-section of society?" And she skips down here. Where'd it go? The person did the screenshots did a bad job of, like, the continuing
stringing
from
them
one.
Together, right.
Yeah. Maybe you're not living in the right environment where you have the ability to meet the biggest cross section of society and mingle with all different races and ethnicities and minorities, including even the odd person who still likes Downton Abbey. Topical reference. Okay. Only then can you write a book about your life and your experience of living, because only then will you have the right to comment on the world. But now you are just ignorant of how life's experiences by every person of every race and every ethnicity, because you do not currently have any Chinese people in your life. When was the last time you knew a Chinese person? Was it really as long ago as university? Think about it. Have you buried a deep-seated racial prejudice against Chinese people and never noticed until now, when you sat down to write your book and realized you couldn't write it because you couldn't be the voice of your generation while not knowing everything about every minority?
Does she realize, like, therapy would be a lot cheaper and that Twitter is not her fucking free therapist? Like,
Tumblr. This is Tumblr.
Okay. Excuse me. Tumblr. Right. No. That
didn't
makes
you
sense.
Realize that writing a book about stuff means you've elected yourself the most proportionally representational. I don't think that's a word. I think
no, she representational is probably the word she was looking for.
Yeah. Anyway, then she puts in parentheses, note, I'm not being racist against Chinese people. I'm just exaggerating shit to illustrate some nonsense that's been going on regarding criticism of Lena Dunham's show Girls and its apparent racist agenda with its lack of casting of women of color. Don't get all weird on me now.
Of course Lena Dunham defend like that.
She's mocking people who want representation for WOC, women of color, by coming up with a completely ridiculous scenario of how she can't write a book about herself because there's not enough Chinese people in her life. And how, you know, so Lena Dunham, who writes a TV show called Girls, who could have, you know, had all these fictional characters, could have cast anyone she wanted to, but didn't, is the same thing as not being able to write your autobiography at age 23 for fear of being called out as racist.
Right. No, exactly the same thing. Lena Dunham, famous fucking psychopath who can't even, you know, who seemingly abuses her dogs and like has had to have them forcibly removed from them by several animal shelters.
She took her dog back. She took it back because it didn't behave enough. So she took a dog back to the fucking shelter. Who does that? And then the shelter had to be like, the dog wasn't like this when she got it from us.
Right. She fucked it up or whatever.
She fucked up the dog. So just to close it out here, she writes, your political correctness, she writes that in caps, hasn't just gone mad. It's gone counterproductive. It's become insulting. Here I am thinking about how to actively not be racist by being hypersensitive about people of other races purely because they are of another race. What the fuck? When I went to see Rob Delaney on Friday night, he joked about multiculturalism, something about how it would be really weird to actually walk into a pub reflecting the perfect microcosm of society where a white girl, a black dude, a gay, and then just cuts off there. So it's just like she's literally just saying like she's angry that she has to think about, you know, institutional racism and how, you know, she participates in it because Lena Dunham shouldn't have to be criticized.
Right. For a stupid fucking show. Right. It just unreal. Unfucking real. Well, and again, this is why she is, in fact, Eve Fartlow and will always be Eve Fartlow. But yeah.
Somebody tweeted out here, it's hilarious that she thinks anybody would want a book about her life.
Right.
And then somebody commented, chapter 35, another ratio.
Oh my God. She's going to write a book just about Eve Fart, like just about that one incident alone that spawned, you know, the repeated fucking, yeah. And just, you know, how the new anti-Semitism on the left is expressed through Eve Fartlow and other various misnomenclatures, mocking of her name. But yeah, so, obviously, you mentioned that we had a Halloween clip, from, frequent contributor, not that she knows it, to the show. What's her name?
Eleanor Morton.
Eleanor, yeah, right.
So the first, you might want to start it a few seconds in, like start it like the 7 second mark, because it begins without any audio.
Right, it just plays, but I'll take care of it. But yeah,
all right. So this is the Bride of Frankenstein isn't ready for marriage.
Yeah, so I'm gonna play this.
Oh, hi. Sorry, I didn't see you there. Marry who? Marry Frankenstein. Okay, he's quite distinguished looking, yeah. What? Oh, Frankenstein's monster. Right, who's he? Ah! Oh, sorry. Sorry, that was just a visceral reaction. I don't want to seem old-fashioned, although some parts of me literally are, but my mum always said, get to know a guy before marrying him, you know. don't jump into nuptials with the first abomination that you see when you open your eyes. I guess I'm not really in the mood for a wedding. I mean, there's something about being brought to life purely to be the helpmate of a hideous monster that is just really, really bumming me out. I mean, he might not even fancy me. We don't know yet. I mean, yeah, obviously he will, because men's standards are depressingly low. They'll take a walking corpse as long as it's got boobs. The other thing is, I've been married before. I mean, if we total up all my body parts, I've been married 22 times, so I don't want to rush into anything. Can I be honest? And I don't want to seem shallow, but I feel like you put a lot more effort into making me look good than him. You know, he's really not the kind of guy I go for, normally. Well, normally they're not green. Part of me is saying, yeah, give it a go. But the other part of me was taken from a dead nun. So no, not keen at all. I'm not really sure if I'm even the kind of person who wants to get married, you know? I like being single. But if I was, I think the colour scheme would be mauve and blue, and there would be wooden napkin rings, and there would be a four-piece, like, string quartet thing, I guess. Yeah, and the flag. I mean, I might not even be allowed to get married. Technically, I'm only a couple of hours old. I know the German authorities are pretty loose on these things, but even they would draw the line. I really hope. I'm not completely against the idea, but can we take it slowly, yeah? The First Date of Frankenstein. How's that for a film title?
Nice.
I love her.
Yeah, no, she's great. That's ironic, because my wife actually, for my birthday, surprised me with a really awesome, like, screen accurate Frankenstein mask from this company, Trick or Treat Studios, who does, like, really good. Like, I have a bunch of their Michael Myers, like, from each of the Halloween movies, they make a Michael Myers mask, because, you know, the masks in those movies are a fucking mess. They're all different. They can never replicate the...
She didn't think that just your regular Italian face would scare small children coming to your door enough. You had to go an extra mile.
But no, it's actually like a Boris Karloff, like, shaped from, like, a life mold of his face. It's it's legit. Good shit.
So now, are you in an area where there's, you know, going to be kids coming to trick or treat on you, knock on your door?
Yeah, we get like, I mean, you know, because with COVID last year, we didn't get like hardly any, but I don't know, who knows? Yeah. We'll see what happens this year. But no, I have like a pretty decent size mask collection at this point. I just kind of like have a display. I'm trying to figure out how to display them in my office without. it's a cool collecting.
I hope you're not receiving clients in this office of any kind.
No, I'm just fucking recording this thing in here.
Oh, back there, what's that? Oh, those are the heads of people I've killed in fish tanks. Right. And at the end of the day, after a long hard day, you know, of killing zombies, I just like to sit there and stare at them. You know, that sound, that's my daughter. She's a zombie and she's tied up and locked in a box in there. And there's a little thing around her neck.
I actually have all three masks from your favorite film, Halloween 3. You know, the witch.
I don't want to know that. I don't even want to know that you have such things in your possession. Well, yeah.
Sorry to tell you.
I'm not a fan of Halloween and masks and any of it. Honestly, like it's never
the holiday just, in general.
You know, it was cute when you're a kid. Then you grow up, and it's like, oh, this is your whole identity is this thing. You know, like, but you shouldn't be an adult and still have your favorite movie be the fucking Nightmare Before Christmas. That's not a thing that an adult should possess in their life, is it?
More of like the Disney adult territory. Like, that's, you kind of get with that movie in particular, which, you know, a lot of people have like fucking tattoos of and shit, which, you know, is a little beyond
that. And that's what I'm talking about. It's like, look, it's a fun thing for kids. And I guess if you have kids, it's fun to go watch them run around and do that shit. But now, like, oh, the whole fucking month of October is now this product that we have to live with, whether you like it or not.
Well, yeah. Well, on that note, for me and for my co-host, the Scrooge of Halloween, Comrade Dracula. I don't know what the Halloween Scrooge equivalent would be, but but I guess you are now it. That pretty much does it for us this week. Rate, review, and subscribe on whatever you listen to us on. Follow us on soundcloud.com/moveleft, facebook.com/moveleftidiots if you want to yell about how we're Republicans or whatever the fuck you want to yell at us.
We're commie Nazis, remember?
Right. We're fascist
Kafka progressive Marxist, commie Nazi commies.
DNC members, right.
cultists. They called us cultists.
Right. Facebook.com/moveleftidiots. SoundCloud or patreon.com/moveleft. I am on Twitter @move_left.
I'm at demented, illiterate, psychos, ugly Trump supporters. Read it backwards. Bike slutty.
And we'll see you next week.
Thank you.